Good afternoon, everybody. You're tuned to 103.2 Dublin City FM, and this is Europe Today with your presenters for this week, Carmel O'Donoghue and I, John Bourne. Coming up on the programme today, we'll have an extract from EU Agricultural Commissioner Phil Hogan's keynote address to the Forum for the Future of Agriculture, which was held recently in Brussels. Carmel has her regular roundup of headline European stories she believes will have a direct impact on us here in Ireland. We'll have some local European news, and we'll have some wonderful Irish and Scots Gaelic music for your enjoyment as well. So stay tuned to us here on 103.2 Dublin City FM for the next half an hour on your programme Europe Today. Today is World Autism Day, and events are taking place around the globe to raise awareness about the condition. It's estimated that one in every 100 children in Ireland are on the autistic spectrum. Pioneering research is taking place in England, where autistic children are engaging with computerised humans known as avatars to assess behaviour patterns. Dr. Antonia Hamilton of University College London says her focus is on copycat behaviour.
We're interested in understanding how people interact with each other, mainly imitation. We know that children copy each other all the time, adults copy without knowing it, and people with autism find some kinds of copying easy but others hard, and we're trying to sort out exactly what's going on there.
The European Consumer Centre has issued a warning to consumers to check who exactly they are dealing with if buying car parts online. The centre says it has received numerous complaints of where Irish people purchased motor parts in England on the internet and paid a money transfer only for the items not to be sent. Grace Duffy of the ECC office in Dublin says consumers should check the credibility of such websites before parting with money.
In these instances, mainly, unfortunately, prevention can be better than cure. So the first thing we'd advise consumers to do is to make sure that they do plenty of research, do a couple of internet searches on the trader and see if any negative feedback or concerns have been raised by other people. And if at all possible, try to avoid paying by bank transfer, simply because that money is very difficult to recover if something goes wrong. So if you're in a position to pay by credit card, then that's a far more secure method of payment.
A car company could help to eliminate the deadly ash dieback disease that is killing ash trees. That's the view of the Fine Gael MEP Sean Kelly. He says the Cork-based Tree Metrics company has the technology and know-how to help tackle the disease through their satellite and online technologies. Ash dieback is a potentially fatal disease of ash trees that is caused by a fungus that has spread rapidly across Europe. Mr. Kelly says the production of hurleys could be affected if ash trees in Ireland are impacted by the disease, and he's encouraging the GAA to help Tree Metrics to assess areas where ash trees are grown.
They have developed satellite imagery now which can highlight where the ash dieback is happening or likely to occur, and then can help to remove it. But to do that, they have asked me to highlight that they will be requiring the assistance of farmers, but particularly of GAA clubs, to help them to get down into the detail and to get that place where the ash dieback is likely to happen or is happening removed. And then that will help to eliminate the disease. And then if that is eliminated, then they can regrow ash and develop it from there.
Galileo, the EU's satellite navigation programme, has just placed two more satellites into orbit. The liftoff took place on the 27th of March at 22:46 Central European Time from the European Spaceport near Kourou in French Guiana. Elisabetha Bienkowska, European Commissioner for Internal Market, Industry, Entrepreneurship and SMEs, commented, "The successful launch of two Galileo satellites takes us one step closer to a global European satellite navigation system." Here is an extract from her announcement.
Galileo, it has to be said that this is the biggest European infrastructure project, 7 billion euros, financed in 100% and owned 100% by the EU. And of course, my objectives for Galileo are very simple and very clear. I want to ensure the deployment of the infrastructure in time and on budget, and I want to deliver as soon as it possible. So firstly, in the next year, 2016, the first services from the Galileo data. We want to have 30 satellites up to 2020, and we want to use them very broadly for transport, rail and road sector, for mobiles, for real estate. And generally, this is the, something that Europe cannot miss. We are still lagging behind the other global economies. But I'm very happy to announce that, again, we are back on the track with the Galileo launch. Everybody uses Soyuz launcher. And, of course, in our case, this is provided via Arianespace, so European Satellite Launch Service Company. We are waiting to have Ariane 5 ready for the next launches, but it will be ready as soon as the beginning of 2016. Thank you.
Dinah. is Carmel O'Donoghue for Europe Today on 103.2 Dublin City FM.
Airlines are changing procedures to ensure two new crew members are in the cockpit at all times during flights following the French Alps plane disaster. Airlines in Europe aren't required to have two people in the cockpit at all times, unlike the standard US operating procedure, which was changed post-9/11 attacks, to require a flight attendant to take the spot of a briefly departing pilot. In the UK, Monarch, EasyJet, Virgin Atlantic and Thomas Cook all confirmed that they had changed their policies. Ryanair, Jet2 and Flybe said they had already required two crew members to be in the cockpit at all times. New approaches to drug pricing and reimbursement are needed to make sure pharma industry provides access to new medicines. That's according to a report by the World Health Organization. It warns that it will not be possible for pharma to bring these new treatments to market unless radical changes are made to address the situation proactively. The European Commissioner for Competition expects to launch a probe into the e-commerce sector in May. The Commissioner said that while almost half of all consumers shop online, only 15% do so across borders. While she recognised that this may be in part due to language barriers, she has also accused online companies of undermining cross-border trade by erecting technical barriers such as geo-blocking. The European Commission has warned EU citizens that they should close their Facebook accounts if they want to keep information private from US security services. They found that current safe harbour legislation doesn't protect citizens' data. The comments were made in a case brought by privacy campaigner Maximilian Schrems, looking at whether the data of EU citizens should be considered safe if sent to the US in a post-Snowden revelation landscape. The EU milk quota regime has ended on the 31st of March this year. First introduced in 1984, at a time when EU production had far outstripped demand, the quota regime was one of the tools introduced in overcoming these structural surpluses. Successive reforms of the EU's cap have provided a range of other more targeted measures to help support producers in vulnerable areas, such as mountain areas where the cost of production are higher. The digital single market is now a step closer. The European Commission have agreed key areas for action that will remove obstacles for consumers and businesses alike and create a digital single market, making the EU single market freedoms go digital and boost growth and jobs. The main areas are better access for consumers and businesses to digital goods and services and shaping the environment for digital networks and services to flourish. While the EU's stated ambition is to make every European digital, but there are some parts of Europe that ambition is a long way from being realised. That's according to the European Commission's 2014 Digital Agenda Scoreboard. 20% of the EU population has never used the internet. That percentage is, according to Eurostat, more than 30% in seven member states, including Romania, Bulgaria, Greece, Italy, Portugal, Cyprus and Poland. There's a lot of work to do to improve digital access. The number seeking asylum in the EU has risen by 44% last year to reach over 626,000 people. Almost one third of them applied for asylum in Germany. The next most popular destination countries were Sweden at 13%, Italy at 10% and France at 10%. The Ukraine has joined Horizon 2020 to work with the EU in science and research. This means that researchers, businesses and innovators from Ukraine will now be able to fully participate in Horizon 2020, the European Union's research and innovative funding programme. They will be on equal terms with EU member states and other associated countries.
This is Carmel O'Donoghue for Europe Today on 103.2 Dublin City FM.
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.
Now you can follow Europe Today on Twitter.
The 8 Forum for the Future of Agriculture was held recently in Brussels. The 2015 theme for this annual meeting was the UN Sustainable Development Goals and Possible Implications for EU Agriculture. The keynote address was given by Commissioner Phil Hogan, member of the EC in charge of Agriculture and Rural Development. Here is his opening statement.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is indeed a great pleasure to be here today and to join former commissioners and indeed many eminent speakers on this very important subject. And today, of all days, it is appropriate to talk about the future of agriculture. It is a significant day in the history of the CAP. It's the last day of EU milk quotas. But I'll say more about that later. Let me start by talking about what I believe global food security and sustainable agriculture means for Europe, what our CAP is doing to achieve this, and then outline what the EU is doing, not only via the CAP, to achieve this throughout the world. So what does food security mean from a European perspective? As I see it, the EU has a responsibility to address food security, given the huge global challenge to end poverty and reduce the estimated 11% of the world population facing chronic food insecurity. Most rely on agriculture, indeed, for their livelihoods. And our goal is to ensure that the EU continues to play a key role in satisfying food demand and ensuring food security by enhancing the overall competitiveness of our agri-food sector through various ways. Firstly, by enabling economic operators to rely on policy consistency so they can confidently undertake long-term investment and take advantage of global demand increases. Secondly, by promoting innovation as a motor for quality and value added. And thirdly, by ensuring policy remains essentially non-trade distorting. In this sense, let me just take a few moments to remind you about how much the CAP has changed through a series of reforms over the last 25 years, launched by my compatriot Ray McSharry back in the early 1990s. And we have moved from a system of price support with a heavily protected market to a market-orientated agricultural sector. We have broken the link between subsidies and production so that farmers and agribusiness look to the market rather than to Brussels when they decide what they will produce. And as a result, we have a more modern, more competitive sector, and we have seen considerable investment in innovation as the sector has moved forward. Nevertheless, we still face the fundamental challenge of how to increase production while respecting our natural resources. How to produce more using less. So what does sustainable agriculture in Europe mean? I have said on several occasions, and I've heard it said today already by Franz Fischler, that EU agribusinesses continue to be economically sustainable if they are not environmentally sustainable. There are two sides of the same coin. Sustainability is a central component of the CAP and is reflected in three long-term CAP objectives: viable food production, sustainable management of natural resources and climate action, and balanced territorial development. And following the 2013 reform, 30% of direct payments to European farmers are linked with using environmentally friendly agronomic methods. These methods, such as crop diversification, ecological focus areas, maintaining permanent pastures, play a very important role for the good management of water, for fighting soil erosion and biodiversity loss, and preserving natural landscapes. Moreover, 30% of the funds for rural development investments are linked to fighting climate change. This includes measures for agri-environment and climatic purposes, organic farming, and payments for areas facing natural constraints. So in financial terms, this means that approximately €100 billion is directly related to the delivery of environmentally public goods. So what is the EU doing to help food security and sustainable agriculture elsewhere in the world? The EU has a commitment in the treaty to policy coherence for development. This means that we make sure that our agricultural and agri-trade policies remain compatible with development priorities and are non-trade, non-market distorting. The EU has moved away from intervening in the normal functioning of our agricultural markets. We've moved from supporting products to supporting producers. Our trade policy is development friendly, open to least developed and many other developing countries, and not requiring reciprocity. We have practically put an end to export subsidies. Since the 1st of January 2014, export refunds have ceased to be an option as a means of systematically supporting a sector. Moreover, in the framework of the economic partnership agreements in West, Eastern and Southern Africa, the EU commits itself to stop any export subsidies. So the key point is that the changes in the policy have rendered such a policy tool irrelevant. The EU now has a much more open market than in the past, and it is through trade that the EU is making a major contribution to global food security, with balanced two-way trade as well as openness to imports from developing countries. And thanks to the reform CAP and the massive efforts of our farmers and producers, the EU is now the world's biggest importer and exporter of agri-food. High value-added products, notably drink and spirits, but not only that, contributed to that export performance and the surplus. Our trade openness to developing countries contributes to boosting the agricultural sector and the rural economy in these countries. So in more global terms, how can the European Union work with the United Nations on these issues of food security and sustainable agriculture? To propose sustainable development goals is an opportunity, and targets are broadly welcomed by the EU as a good basis for developing the post-2015 development agenda. These goals will apply to all. Political commitment is needed. Contributions towards reaching those goals must be fairly shared at all levels of development and by all countries. And this agenda calls for change to end extreme poverty, which is mostly rural, to promote research and innovation for sustainable agriculture, to end hunger, and the list goes on and on. But to be credible, we need to have a clear set of ambitious and realistic goals that are accompanied by achievable and measurable targets. Goal 2, that is to end hunger, achieve food security, and improve nutrition and promote sustainable agriculture, requires a wide range of actions. And countries' domestic policy environments, financial and non-financial instruments are key to success. One of the biggest challenges in the negotiations ahead will be around how the burden of responsibility will be shared. Let me assure you that European agriculture is ready to play its role.
Agus crew the one year.
Well, I'm afraid that's all we have time for this week's, folks. I hope you've enjoyed the programme. Don't forget to check out our website support platform, which is europetoday.ie. That'll have a podcast of today's programme and links to the various items that we've mentioned as well. If you want to get in contact with us, give us a ring on 865-8020. That's 865-8020. Or you can text us on 087-977-1032. 087-977-1032. And you can also use the contact form on the website as well. Join us again here on 103.2 Dublin City FM at the same time next week on your programme Europe Today.